Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 78 of season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again on this lovely Wednesday at the end of August is DJ Ballantyne from Simplistic Reviews. Welcome back, DJ.
Yippee-ki-yay, Bendejo. How you doing? Frank Nero. How you guys doing? Hi, I'm
doing
happy
great,
on
doing
hump
great.
Day to get to some Die Hard 2.
Yeah, why not? So, minute 78 begins with Baker giving an update and ends with John just cursing. That's pretty much how it ends.
True.
Yep. can't get away from that one. So yesterday we ended things with John trying to save the day by, deciding to start playing for the other team and being the bad guy and, offering to help them out if they save his wife.
I'm going to put this out there. The last Die Hard movie, Hans just say, seeing that I'm moving up to kidnapping, you ought to be more polite. This is very similar in terms of John McClane is moving up to kidnapping. Essentially,
yeah, but is it the same crime if you're kidnapping a felon?
Yes,
an escape felon.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It doesn't matter if they're a criminal or not. If you're not registered, first of all, that guy's not even a citizen. You've taken to somebody else.
Well, no, he's
against their will and shot and punched them. Yes,
he is being extradited to America. So
yeah, by the military. Not by the New York Police Department. No.
Well, actually, I guess that's
the movie LA is LA Police Department. He's way off track. He's not even on the right coast. So yes, you're a kidnapper, John. You're a kidnapper.
Yes, you're a kidnapper, John McClane.
You're a kidnapper, John. I want a novel. You're a kidnapper, John McClane. It's like you're a good man, Charlie Brown, but instead you're a kidnapper, John McClane.
Why not? So yesterday we ended things finally by John going into the cockpit and sealing himself in there, and then Baker sealing him in there even tighter by putting an axe against the door so that he can't get out. And we ended things yesterday with Esperanza basically saying that, it's a policeman.
It's a policeman.
That's right. It's some sort of policeman. And then, Baker chimes in and goes, he went into the cockpit. And the steward goes, he's going to hell.
Now, I'm going to say this, okay? Matthew Stewart, my other co-host on the Simplistic Reviews podcast, that exchange is perhaps me and him's favorite exchange. He loves this movie. I love part one. He loves part two.
You should have invited him to join me. Come on.
Yeah, I should have. He's with his wife's doing wifey things. But we do this just out of the blue. We'll be on a commentary, and sometimes you'll hear me and Matt for no reason just say, I'll say, he's going to the cockpit, and Matt will go, he's going to hell, McClane. We do it all the time. We don't know why. That and I Have Enough Friends are probably our favorite exchange in this movie. But yes, he's in the cockpit, he's going to hell. I don't know why it makes me laugh, makes him laugh. We don't know why.
Yes,
just do it all the time. He's going to hell, McClane. I love it.
That's right. Because Stewart knows that it can't be anybody else.
I think it's Sadler's delivery. It's Sadler's delivery, I think, that mostly that just makes it. It just makes me giggle every time I hear it.
Well, wait a second. Let's actually take this a little further. I mean, William Sadler also plays Death in Bill and Ted's.
It's true.
So therefore, he knows he's going to hell because he's coming to him.
It's going to me, McClane.
Come to Papa McClane. Maybe? I don't know.
Good old Sadler.
That's right.
It's funny. It's an unintentionally hilarious exchange that I like.
That's right. And then Stuart screams, McClane, I assume it's you, McClane. You're quite a little soldier. You can consider this a military funeral.
Now, this scene, and you kind of alluded to it yesterday. You said the part where Han says to John in the first movie, you were saying, this is very reminiscent to the shoot the glass
scene. Yes.
Where it's just McClane, like, hunkering down as the bad guys fire thousands of rounds at him and glass balls all around him and stuff. This is like the shoot the glass scene that
completely
they're about to go through.
In the first movie, there's a lot more glass, you know, around all the computers as opposed to what they have here in the windows. But they make it seem as if there's the same amount of glass, if not more here. But the thing that really jumped out at me here, and I didn't notice this until I was looking at this minute by minute, is you still see the dead pilot on the ground lying next to John.
What do you think he went? You think he left?
I know, I never noticed that he was just lying there. You know, they still have the actor lying there next to John. It makes sense, Rob, but I'm saying I never noticed it.
He's dead, Rob. He has to lay.
Let me tell you about that. He's got nowhere to go. I know that. I'm aware of that. He's already in hell.
When you die, he's going to hell. Okay, McClane.
That's right. It makes sense.
Oh boy.
No, my point is that I never noticed that it was there. It makes sense that it's there. But, you know.
I mean, it'd be more surprising if he wasn't there.
Where'd he go? Come on. What about Thompson's body? We don't see him right now.
We don't know. He's gone no more. We won't see him no more.
He might pop up. We'll have to wait and see. We shall see. So John tries to open the cockpit door. Doesn't help him because it's jammed in with the
the castle door maneuver.
That's right, with the axe.
the sacking York maneuver from Braveheart.
Right. Doing that. Yes, of course. Then Stuart starts shooting, at the plane, and John hunkers down on the ground and covers his head, and once again he's right next to the pilot.
The dead, dead. He's dead.
And
he's dead,
it's guy. Unbelievable how many bullets, you know, these three guys shoot. You know, you only have three of them that are standing there. Yeah, Garber, Stewart, and Baker, and they're just shooting, and we see all of the damage to the plane itself. You know, it's not even they don't even try to hide it, and you know, John starts screaming as all the glass starts breaking. You know. What is it? Shistin, what, how does
Shistavan,
something like that? Shistin, sister, you know, some type of thing. So I don't know, but there's a lot of glass falling out, and it's definitely more glass than this plane should have, you know. I mean, we talked a little bit last week, or I think it was last week, about the fact that about the whole idea of cabin pressure and stuff like that, you know, that they already had the hole in the window, you know, that was causing so much trouble, but here, they're just, you know, these guys couldn't shoot John before, but they can shoot glass really well. Yeah,
they're very accurate with see-through objects.
That's right. That's right. And the plane itself. I mean, if you look at the front of the plane, it also is completely, you know, covered in all these bullet holes that they've added in there. And
I'd love to ask somebody who in the military how bulletproof is a front of a military cargo plane. I'm thinking he still would have got shot. I don't know how. I mean, we saw the doors made of vibranium or something, but we don't know what the front part of the plane is made
especially
of.
Especially the parts with the glass, you know.
You're right, exactly.
And then Stuart stops shooting, and he screams out, he goes, "How many grays we got?" And then Garber goes, "Three each." He goes, "Okay, use them."
He saw the glee. The glee that
use them. It's like we got nothing better to do with them, so why not? Now,
screw it, you throw them in there. Who cares?
Now, my question here is, how many grenades do they have then at this point? Because there's three of them.
Six.
Right. Well, see, that's the thing.
Yeah, so six, I would assume, right? Or nine.
Why does Stuart have to ask how many grenades do we have? He wouldn't he know how many grenades he's holding?
I think that because they pull the pin and toss it to the next guy.
Really smart.
So maybe it's six.
And
yeah, I don't agree with that.
And what about, you know, maybe they can grab the ones off of Thompson? I don't know. Yeah, he must have three also.
Thompson wasn't carrying any. He was keep laying there, Thompson. We're just gonna take these grenades out of your grip.
Because I tried counting how many grenades come through the window today and tomorrow, and it just doesn't make sense. Because you hear a lot of clunks. You know, you don't actually see every one of the grenades come in. You know, like in this minute, we only hear.
We don't know what these.
We only
are
hear four clunks in this minute.
Right. I think these again are the slowest hand grenades I've ever seen. I thought they were supposed to go off in 5 seconds. They have time to like joke, pull the pin, throw it. It hits the thing. It rolls down. It hits the ground. Another one comes in. It's like how long is this grenade taking to go off? I just watched like Call of Duty. It's like 2 seconds. Boom, boom. That's the
yes.
Shoot, Halo is quicker than that. I don't know.
Again, coming from someone who has thrown one grenade in their life, it doesn't stay this long.
Okay.
In basic training, we each threw one grenade.
It's like 5 seconds, right? Something like that.
But I got to tell you, like, okay, so I remember in basic training, you know, I was very scared. You know, they gave us a hand grenade, and my commander said to me, "Okay, do you see the target?" And I was like, "Yeah." I didn't see the target. And he says, okay, pull the pin and throw it.
Oh, jeez. You lied.
And I just threw it.
You did the opposite.
That's right. I just threw it in the direction that he said, and that was it. You know, and then it exploded, and he goes, you know that you missed the target by a lot. I was like, oh, well. I was like, I've seen too many movies.
Oh, my God. You were almost the movie. You were almost the movie. He told me he saw the target.
But
he
told me. I didn't drop it next to me. You know, it's not like –
Okay, you didn't get a zero on the assignment. You got a three.
Hey, a three.
Because if you drop it next to your foot, that's a zero. Yes.
That's actually a minus.
Or incomplete, that's a minus. Actually. It's actually incomplete. You don't finish the test.
Yeah.
You're going to have to retake that test. In hell.
Yeah.
Apparently. With William Sadler.
Yeah, I stay away from grenades.
Yeah. Everybody, here's your public service announcement. Stay away
now, from grenades. I don't have a problem with rifles and pistols, away. But, you know, grenades, I don't know.
I don't know. The funniest thing I've ever seen in the airport, you walk in the airport and you see a sign that says, at least down here, a picture of a gun with a line through it. And there's also a picture of a hand grenade with a line through it. I'm like, do you need to put this sign? I thought that was kind of assumed. Like, don't bring grenades to the airport.
Oh, wow.
I want to see the guy goes, what? Being searched, they put like they arresting him. It's like, what? What? I can't bring a grenade. What's wrong? What's wrong with it? You didn't have a sign. How am I supposed to know?
If you don't tell me. In what word do you think they started using hand grenades? What American war? What American war did they start using hand grenades?
Oh man, that's a good one. They didn't. Did they use?
Let's say modern hand grenades.
Korean War?
Yeah, you know, they no. It goes all the way back to the Civil War.
Really?
Yes. During the Civil War, what they basically did was both sides had hand grenades equipped with a plunger that detonated the device on impact.
I want to see a Civil War hand grenade. I don't even know what that would look like. What is a Civil War hand?
Yeah, I know. I've seen a lot of Civil War movies.
I've never seen a hand grenade. I watched Gettysburg. I didn't see Jeff Daniels throwing hand grenades. I missed that part.
Yeah, I don't know. No clue. And then obviously they started using them. They used them a lot in World War One. And they weren't as successful using them in trench warfare.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
You know, I guess
I would assume. Yeah. I would assume that's bad.
Yeah, but obviously they improved them over the years, and hand grenades are something very different these days,
right,
than what they were back then. So yeah, the you know we're basically watching John notice everything going on in slow motion. I think that's more or less how we can describe it. You know, as each of these hand grenades, you know, lands inside. I mean, like you said, the first thing that happens is Garber pulls the pin, throws one to throws one. No, wait a second. Garber doesn't pull the pin out. He tosses a grenade over to Stewart. Stewart pulls out the pin and then throws it. So like they're playing hot potato. They're not playing hot potato.
It seemed like they were playing hot potato when I saw it. I was like, wait, what?
It did. It definitely seems that way, but it is not.
Okay, thank God, and, I guess.
And then basically only Stewart and Baker throw. We only see the two of them throwing hand grenades because Garber throws his grenade to Stewart, and they're both pretty good shots. I mean, they weren't able to hit with the guns besides hitting the the glass, but round, getting it into that small window.
They could be quarterback for the New York Jets.
These guys. I was actually going to say that they could be pitchers, but yeah, they can also be quarterbacks. That's true. Because of the way they're lobbing things. And exactly. And then John's just like sitting there, and like one of them like hits this like stand and then like rolls off and then like lands on the ground right next to him. And he's just like looking at it. And then John goes, oh, fuck.
I think this scene logistically works better if that shot's in slow motion, but it's better because it's so matter of factly a whole bunch of grenades just drop in front of you. It doesn't make any sense logistically, but it looks better. Like if you were going to do it like where it's in slow mo, we wouldn't care that, wow, man, these grenades are taking a long time to go off, but it would be less cool than this, him just sitting there and just they just drop in front of him. So yeah.
That's right. No, it's used for comical effect here. No question about that. You know, to add a little bit of suspense, because, you know, anyone who's seen movies knows that grenades can go off anytime, you know, but these are possibly duds. I don't know. It goes back to the Last Action Hero. You know, you got the grenade at the beginning, which doesn't go off.
I'm thinking of Saving Private Ryan when they throw the grenade and the guy throws it back and he has like half of a second.
That's right.
And blows up in the air. So, yeah.
That's true. Awesome. That's another good example of it. And then, you know, John starts counting the grenades coming in. We see at least four drop by, and then he quickly turns his head to the side and sees the it says danger eject, and then he screams, "Oh shit!" And then that's the way this minute ends. So we're gonna leave everyone in suspense until tomorrow to find out what happens to John.
Oh, John, know what the word eject means? Will he know what eject means?
Will he know how to do this? Who knows? All right, you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
William Sadler makes the scene. William Sadler's awesome. He's awesome in most things, but yeah, he's no Hans, but I do enjoy him, and I do enjoy him a lot in this scene right here.
Yeah, I think part of the thing is they don't utilize him well enough in this movie.
No, his good comedic timing. He's got good act. He's good at pretty much anything. He's a very good character actor. Every time I've ever seen him,
for sure,
he nails it. So,
for sure. Yeah. I think part of his problem is that he's always been compared to Hans Gruber and Simon Gruber, which is a problem.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because the two of them are great villains. Mm-hmm. And as amazing as Stewart is here, he's just not given enough to do. He's more of a background character, you know, trying to keep an ominous feel to everything that's going on. But he's not as hands-on as the others are.
Right.
I guess you can say
he's not as slick because Hans and Simon they're thieves. They're slick. They're charismatic. This guy's more buttoned-down military guy, so you're not going to get the.
That's true. The you quippiness. Can't expect Ali North to be
exactly
that much.
Ali North can't be Bugsy Malone, okay? He can't do that.
That's right. That's true. That's very true. So the script again, it's nice and descriptive. It says so. Garber says he went into the cockpit. He's going to hell, and then it says silence. McLean in the cockpit reacts to the two dead men sharing the tiny space with him, the snow and glass everywhere. And then he crawls to the door, gingerly tries it. It won't move. He tries harder. On the other side of the door, there's a rescue axe that is across the door like a barricade. McLean looks worried. And then Stewart shouts, "McLean, I assume it's you, McLean." Stewart, Esperanza, and two of the others ring the nose of the plane, weapons out. Garber, the last man, comes up, delayed by locking McLean in the cabin. Stuart then says, "You're quite a little soldier, so consider this a military funeral." And he opens fire. The others instantly join in. McClane, inside the cockpit, ducks as five machine guns begin to rip this place apart. What's left of the glass implodes and ricochets begin slamming around the room. McClane eats floor, but the snaking lines of bullets crisscross the cockpit, searching him out. Holy mother of God! Glass rakes his forehead, blood misting his vision. He crawls to the door, throws his weight against it. Nothing. Having decimated the front of the plane, Stuart signals, and now they flank the sides. What's left of the window glass reflects their fire like a 4th of July show. Esperanza alone smiles as he shoots. McClane gets hit in the left hand. Stuart then says, "How many grenades we have?" Garber says, "Two each." "Use them." Pop, 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 pop. Each man pulls two pins and throws. And that's the way the minute ends in the script.
He doesn't get shot in the hand in the movie, does he?
No. That was Esperanza yesterday.
Yeah. But doesn't McClane have his hand bandaged in a later scene? Is it from this?
His hand was bandaged from back when he dealt with the T-1000.
You're right. That's what. Okay. Yeah. Because I remember. I'm getting this out of order because I haven't seen it straight, but I do remember somebody bandaging his hand. But yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Aviation Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that has happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow related to aviation. Something could happen in an airport, on an airplane, in a spacecraft. Who knows? So, DJ, you got a story for us?
I was on a spacecraft. No, I was at my cousin's wedding. I was at my cousin's wedding in Rhode Island. I'm from Florida, so it's a great wedding. Got married. Everything's great. And we're flying back, and I had work the next day, and the plane was delayed for, I don't know, it seemed like 2 hours. And we're sitting there, and we're like, okay, they gave us food, how long it took for us to get on the plane. And they said that we were delayed because it's when we were talking about the cockpit, and the window or the cockpit, they can't connect it. Something was wrong with the window of the cockpit. Essentially, they gave us like vague details, and the person that was going to be able to
fix it. So they rolled down the window and couldn't roll it back up?
I don't know. Something happened with they were very vague on the details. But they said the person that was going to be able to fix it had to fly in from LaGuardia to Rhode Island to fix the thing. So we get in the plane.
Okay. I actually thought you were talking about to Miami. That would have been crazy.
No. We were in Rhode Island still. So we're waiting for the person in New York to fly to Rhode Island to repair the window so we can fly back to Miami before. This is a Sunday. Fly back so I can go to work on Monday. And we get on the plane, and they gave us an option. They were like, you can. You know, wait and get on the plane after we repair it, or we'll give you a voucher and you can stay at a hotel and fly the next day. And I was like, well, I got to work tomorrow, so I'll wait. So I wait. It's like 3 hours. We get on the plane. And again, I haven't made this clear. I don't like to fly. That's why I say I go to sleep immediately, because I don't like to fly. So imagine me don't like to fly on a plane with a window that's, I don't know, fixed, maybe. We're not sure. And we're flying back finally, and we're flying through what I would assume would be Thor, because it's just lightning everywhere. And I'm just like, Jesus, I can't sleep at this point. So I'm just like, this is a long flight. And then the pilot goes on, maybe like an hour into the flight, goes, "We're redirecting to Atlanta." Because, which I find out afterwards, the window got dislodged again. So it had to land, and I had to stay in Atlanta overnight because the plane that they repaired the window, something was up with this window. They could not get it to stay, and they got away. We heard the pilot came on right when we were like maybe right approaching Georgia. And they said, yeah, we were redirecting to Atlanta because of the problem with the plane, the whatever. And I was like, man, I was probably supposed to die. I think, because I don't know. I mean, I can only imagine the pilot who's sitting in a cockpit in the window. You're, 18,000 feet in the air, and the window's like probably rattling or something. So, yes, that was like, is that the last time I flew in a plane? No, I flew afterwards. But Jesus. Yeah, that was one of the most harrowing moments, because I really was measuring not coming into work and having to deal with that crap, or, you know, flying in the Twilight Zone plane, essentially. So, yes, I chose Twilight Zone plane, and I chose poorly, apparently. So, yes, I still miss work because I had to land in Atlanta. I chose poorly. So, yes, yes, that was the
worst. Because, in other words, you could have gotten a free hotel and then a normal flight the following day instead of getting stuck in Atlanta.
I really wanted to get home because I didn't want to miss work, and I still miss work, and I risked flying on a plane that still had to land, that still had the problem. So, yes, to this day, I don't even know exactly what this said. Something about the window for the cockpit was dislodged or something. They never got into specific, probably because they didn't want to. I mean, them telling us that was probably way more than they were supposed to. But yeah, again, that was the worst flying experience. I flew over to the UK. Better experience than flying from Rhode Island to freaking Florida was the worst ever in my life.
Well, because when you went to England, you were looking for Valentine's place. So, you know,
it's true. It's true. One of the greatest places ever.
I know. I know. All right. Great. Thank you for that story. Very interesting. So, DJ, you want to once again tell people where they can find DJ Valentine?
Simplistic.reviews. If you're not rate limited on Twitter, you can search me on at trying to be DJV on Twitter, and you can search the website. Twitter account is at simply tweeters. At simple tweeters, and then most of everything else is search simplistic reviews, and will pop up somewhere or usually everywhere. Not a lot of people are called simplistic anything, so yes, just search simplistic reviews, and you'll find us.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com, or you can find me on Facebook, or you can find me on Twitter. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there,